Chapter 42. Walk sat in a rental at the end of Highwood Drive. A line of single-family houses, big, expensive, German cars on every drive. He wore his uniform, though sunk low in his seat. Beside him, empty coffee cups, no food. He'd made the drive, the 1,000 miles. He thought of flying, facing his fear, but he needed his gun, so left that fight for another time. The Noble House was empty. Thomas and his family on their annual vacation. Duchess once told him they spent every summer in Myrtle Beach. Walk had given the address to Leah, knew Dark would show up if he thought the trail might lead to Duchess. Walk had no newspaper, no book, nothing at all to distract him from the task at hand. An hour back, he'd popped a couple of pills. The muscle pain was bad. The convulsing, the need to just lie back and let it ride over him. This would be his last job as a cop, the last hurrah in decades of nothing. He gave no thought to Martha, to Vincent, and the unfurling mess in the Cape. This was for the Radley children. He would keep them safe. He would do it for Star and for Hal. He did not know how close Dark was when he called Leah back, but guessed he was near Montana. Duchess, the tape. It was Dark's last chance to save his crumbling empire. Walk felt the tired like a warm blanket on the coldest night, heavy on him, pulling him deeper, his eyes heavy. The pills, drowsiness, was one of the blessed side effects. He reasoned he hadn't slept well in a year, so there was no danger of it finding him now. Still, he yawned once, then slowly he closed his eyes. Thomas Noble was lying on his bed watching the television when the power cut. He stood, silent, nothing but the sounds of the house, the clock in the hallway, the steady hum of the boiler. He stood, took a step, and stumbled over his bag, packed, ready. His parents had dropped him at camp, same every summer. They lived it up by the beach while he made sand art and tie-dyed t-shirts 8 miles from his own house. He'd snuck out after dark, hiked it back, cut through woodland into his yard, and found the spare key in the garage. It would hit the fan in the morning. By then, he'd be on his way to California, trailing her, helping her. His heart beat fast. He placed a hand on it and tried to calm. He listened but heard nothing, felt dumb for getting freaked out by the dark. He walked to the window and saw the neighboring homes lit, the porch lights burning. He knew where the box was, what to do when the power tripped. He made it to the stairs when he heard the glass break. He froze then, rooted to the spot, unable to move a muscle. He heard the lock turn, the door open. The crunch of steps on glass. He knew his father kept a gun and that it was locked in his office. He also knew he would not have the courage to aim it or fire it, not even with 2 good hands. Steps again, hard on the kitchen floor, then soft on the carpeted hall. He wanted to cry out, announce himself, because half the fear was in going unnoticed. A nice house on a nice street. His mother had jewelry, the kind of showy pieces that might have been noticed. He took a breath and moved fast, treading on the outer edges of the stairs, from the top floor to the middle and into his parents' bedroom. He reached for the phone on the nightstand. No tone. He ran to the window, thought of yelling, but heard steps again, closer this time, at the foot of the stairs. His mind worked fast. He looked at the drop, reasoned he'd break a leg, at least. He spun, looked around, saw a gap beneath the bed, knew there was space in the closet, settled for the guest bedroom, and moved fast. Shadow on the stairs. He did not look back until he made it slip behind the door and pressed himself flat to the wall. He wanted to cry. Fought hard not to. Thought maybe whoever it was would think the house empty, take what they needed and leave.
Thomas. He closed his eyes. I know you're here. I've been watching from the woods. You tell me what I need to know, and I'll leave you be. I give you my word.
He wanted to call out, to ask what the man wanted, and then give him whatever it was right away, no arguing. And then the man called out again, and Thomas Noble felt his blood chill.
Duchess Radley.
The guy with the Escalade, Dark. Thomas Noble looked around wildly, saw nothing he could use, nothing heavy or sharp, nothing that could buy him precious seconds. Dark would find him now. He thought of Duchess, of the first time he'd seen her and what she had been through, their first dance and the time she'd kissed him. He thought of his perfect home and loving parents and where she was now, alone, on the road, a gun in her bag and the courage to use it. He hadn't been able to help her, but now he could. He could prove himself. He could be an outlaw, too. He watched the shape step through the door, big like a fucking monster. And as it neared, Thomas Noble took a deep breath and launched himself through the darkness. Gunshot. Walk woke, jumped from the car, and took off into a run. Broken glass, open door, he barreled through, gun trained out, room to room. He moved up the stairs. The kid was on the floor, backed up to the wall, knees against his chest. You hurt? He shook his head. Above was torn drywall, half the ceiling gone. A warning shot. Where is he? Back door. Walk ran down the stairs. He saw the fencing at the end of the grass, jumped it, and found himself in the woodland behind. He followed a loose trail, gun out in front, as moonlight fell in silver shards that cut their way through thick growth. Dark! He yelled. Heard nothing, so kept running. He moved through towering trees. And then ahead he caught sight of the shape by a tree, moving slow. Walk raised his gun. He stood, feet apart, hands locked. He fired once. The big shape fell. He moved on, slow. By the time he made it to him, Dark had propped himself back against a tree. Nothing in his hands. Walk saw the gun a couple of feet from him, bent and picked it up. Dark breathed hard, shoulder wound, painful enough, but he'd live. Walk listened out, heard nothing. The neighbors would call the cops soon enough. At that moment, Walk did not feel the twitches in his body, just focused solely on the job, his place. He was not yet ready to give either up.
Didn't think you had it in you.
You want to get this done, Dark?
Sure, Chief Walker.
His voice was calm, no emotion despite the end coming at him. You've been holding up all this time.
Healing up. There's people. I owe them. They aren't going away. You have been shot, Walk? Twice for me now.
I've got questions. Dark did not press a hand to the wound, just let the blood run steady down his arms and drip from his fingers. We found Milton. Trollo hooked him. Dark stared up at him. Walk continued. What did he have on you? Dark looked confused, but maybe the wheels were slowly beginning to turn.
He liked to take photographs.
Walk nodded to no one but himself.
He just wanted a friend, someone to go hunting with, so I went. We're all looking for angles, Chief Walker. That's what we do.
Walk thought of Martha. Dark clenched a fist and the blood ran faster.
This the part where I confess my sins?
Distant sirens.
I know about Madeline.
Dark swallowed then, the first trace of emotion.
She's 14 now.
Same age as Duchess Radley.
I didn't want to come for the girl. I tried every other way.
How?
They didn't give me a chance to speak. Just pulled a shotgun.
You're a murderer.
Just like your friend.
Walk took a step back, that dizzying feeling all over again.
Benson. Tragedy has a way of making saints out of sinners. Believe me, I know.
Dark gulped air. The pain was sharp.
The boy in there, I didn't hurt him.
I know.
People see me, the way I look. They think certain thoughts. It's all right. It helps me get things done.
You murdered Star Radley.
You even believe that anymore, Chief Walker? I asked her for a favor, to talk to Vincent for me, get him to sell up. I only had to mention his name and she lost it, throwing punches. She was wild.
You and Vincent made some kind of deal. You couldn't see it through, couldn't raise the money.
I'm a man of my word. Ask Vincent, he'll tell you.
You talk like you know him.
Maybe I do. Maybe Star told me things. She liked to drink, drugs, whatever.
Confession doesn't only happen in church.
What are you saying? Vincent, he's not who you think he is.
Walk watched him, looking for the truth, maybe not wanting to see any of it. Dark's breath grew short then.
I have life insurance, enough to keep Madeline.
It was always about the money.
They won't pay out for suicide, believe me, I checked.
Suicide by cop?
Not if you tell it right.
She doesn't need you? Dark closed his eyes, then opened them to the pain of it all.
A child is always better with a parent in their life, but the place she's in, that's what she needs. That's all I can give her.
She won't get better.
They can't say that for sure. There's a chance in time. Miracles happen every day.
Walk didn't know if he really believed that, but guessed it was what kept him going.
Shoot me. Walk shook his head slowly. Put my gun in my hand and then shoot me.
Walk took a step back. The blood still dripped. Dark was too strong, too big and strong.
Fucking shoot me, please. Just fucking shoot me. I killed the old man. I came for the girl. Please.
Walk heard noise behind, distant but coming.
I can't do that. Mercy, Chief. Your God believes in that.
Walk shook his head. Nothing clear. The right thing, the fair thing. He thought of Madeline, a girl he did not know, and Duchess, a girl he did. He took a step toward Dark.
Give my girl a chance. You can do that. It's in you.
Walk took another step.
They'll lock you up. I'll get out one day and then I'll come for Duchess again. This time it'll be revenge. Simple. I'll shoot her.
Walk saw through it. Too easy.
Fuck, please, Walker. You let the cops take me and my daughter dies. I'm out of money now. I've got nothing. The club is all I had. I can't pay to keep her alive.
Walk stood there, the gun so heavy he could barely hold it.
You need to wipe your prints off it.
Dark lay his head back against the tree. Tears filled his eyes.
There's a key in my pocket. A lockup outside the Cape. West Gale. There's things in there I want Madeline to have. It's important she knows us.
Walk just stared.
We don't have time. Just do it, Chief. Give my girl a chance.
Walk wiped Dark's gun, then leaned down and handed it to him. Dark winced as he raised it, then aimed wide and pulled the trigger. The echo, the ringing in Walk's ears as he raised his own gun. Dark nodded once. Walk pulled the trigger. Chapter 43. Duchess passed the face of towns and lonely mountains, and a sky at times so blue it brought her home to the endless waters of Cape Haven. She rode above the wheel, every bump in her bones, the road laid out like a scar across land her grandfather had once traversed, his only happiness, far behind. They stopped at towns, and people came and went, old men that carried something quiet and forgotten, young men with backpacks and maps and plans, and the couples whose love spilled down the aisle and made Duchess turn her head. The driver, a black man who smiled at her when the bus slept, and they were the only people to see a hitchhiker framed by a Colorado sunrise. Trucks broken down, hood up, and men bent over and in, their women watching the silver pass. Diners and cup cars, Lincolns in a stretch too far from anywhere worth going. At Caroga Plain, a man with a guitar got on and asked the few if they minded. And they all shook their heads, so he sang about golden slumbers, his voice rough, with something in it stripping the roof from the old bus and letting the stars fall in. It was only the night when the moon emptied into the Artaya Canyon and the driver slowed the bus and dimmed the lights that Duchess allowed herself to think of Robin. It hurt her, not like the kind of sweetheart hurt she read about in the glossy someone had left in the seat back. This was a raw kind of gut-your-soul pain, so fierce she doubled over and gasped for air, reached into her bag and found her water and took shallow breaths into the bottle. The driver caught her eye, his filled with wasted concern she would not be all right. Nothing about her would ever be all right again. She ran out of money someplace outside of Dotsero, bulging hills, cratered, a volcano rose, Green trees parted for sterile land so red she bent to touch it. She found a phone booth at a truck stop on 70. Water rushing on ahead, fighting its way from Rocky Mountains to the spread of Mexico and beyond. She called collect, and the operator connected her to a world she felt far from. By grace alone, she got Claudette, and she fought off talk of coming back and the cops and the trouble. She held on just long enough for Claudette to tell her, yeah, he was doing okay, and then Claudette told her to wait, and she'd fetch him. She hung up when she heard him, and then fell against the brick, a long road from anywhere. Too small to be alone, the sky a gathering storm she could not outrun. Her brother saying hello, quiet like he was in on a secret, and her unable to find a word, not a single word to say to him, not even sorry for what she had done and what she would do. She spent her last $2 on milk and a dry bagel. She sat there 4 hours, the sun crawling its arc, the hand of a clock that pushed morning to the blaze of afternoon. In the gas station, a woman worked the counter, a magazine hidden behind, her head down and tired. She wore large glasses and had a stain on her shirt. She gave Duchess the key to the restroom, smiled quick as she did, like she knew the crossroads the girl lived at and had seen so many like her before. Inside smelled bad, graffiti scrawled on every surface, romantic declarations, Tom and Betty Laurel fucked here, numbers to call for a good time. Duchess carefully stripped off her t-shirt and jeans, washed herself with soap she pumped from the dispenser, then dried off with paper towels. She splashed icy water onto her face. The tired creeped from her eyes. Outside, she watched truckers, trying to select the right one based on nothing more than a gut instinct that had not steered her all that well in the past. An hour later, she settled on a big guy with a plaid shirt and handlebar mustache. He drove a clean rig, the name Annie Beth on the hood, a heart on either side. She approached him, and he smiled, took in her wet hair, Stetson, small bag, and 90-pound frame. Where you need to get?
Maybe Vegas?
Vegas, huh?
Yeah.
You a runaway?
No.
I could get in trouble.
I'm not a runaway. I'm 18.
He laughed at that. I'm passing Fish Lake.
Where's that?
Utah.
All right. As they drove, she watched the world, view high and commanding. The cab smelled of leather.
The big guy was Malcolm, like his parents expected him to stop growing at 5'7 and work accounts. There was a plant on the dash, she took that as a good sign, and a photo of a girl not much older than her and a woman beside.
Is that Annie Beth? She said.
My girl.
Pretty.
Sure is. That's old now, 19. University, political science. Pride colored every word.
I check in with her every night. She's so smart, we didn't even know where it came from.
A blessing.
That your wife with her?
Used to be. I like to drink. He pointed to a pin on the dash. 18 months, sober.
Maybe she'll take you back.
Not on the cards for me yet. I got a plant, cactus. I keep that healthy for 6 months, then maybe. It's all about taking it back, right?
She looked at the cactus on the dash, long dead.
She wondered if he knew, and also just how hard it was to kill a cactus.
He tried asking her a little.
She gave nothing, so he quit, pushed his visor down to cull the bright, and then rode mile after mile. She slept a little, woke with such a start he told her it was all right. She saw a red rock, dried out yellows and orange, sunset on a road so long and straight she wondered if she was dreaming. At a truck stop, he told her that was all. She thanked him, and he wished her well.
Go home, he said.
I am.
At the edge of a town that did not have a clear name, Duchess walked beneath a silver sky, her feet so heavy it was all she could do to keep them moving. Tall buildings either side, painted colors that lightened with each step. Yellow planters and sapling trees, dying stores and floating noise. A bar across the street that fluttered neon. Sounds that told her not to go in. She stood there, her bag pulling the skin from her shoulder, eyes so tired, edges blurred and streetlights smothered. Across each step wayward and hard to point, She breathed in stammers, not knowing how to be any longer, her hands numb from the weight, the occasional memory of Robin lighting up her chest, all fire and hatred for the man who had stolen her old life and discarded it so carelessly, like litter in the wind. She pushed the door against better judgment, fought her way to the bar, the men and some women parting, the light all red. The bartender was old, and she asked for a Coke before she realized she didn't have enough. As she fished in her pockets, he set it down, read her well, and then pushed it toward her in an act of kindness, so distant she had almost forgotten it existed. She found a corner and put her bag down, sat on a low stool, and closed her eyes to the sweet drink. A man with a guitar held the other corner, and he called on regulars, and together they played and sang, and the bustling crowd watched and sometimes laughed. There wasn't one that could hold a tune, but Duchess stared on like she hadn't heard music in the longest time. For a moment she closed her eyes, wiped dirt and sweat that crossed her face, and found her mother holding Robin up to the stars like he was something blessed instead of another mistake. And then she found herself on her feet, and she was moving, and again the people parted, the women watching her like she was a child, the men watching her with something like curiosity. She passed the pool table, breathed smoke and beer and the breath of tired men leaning on each other, some swaying to the guitar. When the music died, she reached the corner and the guitar player dipped his hat, and she dipped her own in reply. "You want to sing, girl?" She nodded. "All right, then." She took a seat and looked out, meeting them in turn, some smiles and some not. She leaned, whispered because she wasn't sure of the song's name, only the words, but the man got it and smiled like she'd chosen well enough. He played and she sat silent. He didn't seem to mind when she closed her eyes and Mr. Q, there were murmurs, but she blocked them out, and instead let those chords carry her a year back when her mother was someone she could reach out to, never quite grasp, but the feeling was there. She saw her brother, and then her grandfather, the reparation in his love stealing all the air from her chest. She opened her mouth and sang. She told them she was on their side when times get rough. The murmurs fell silent, and the men at the table stopped lining their shots and instead moved toward the little girl who sliced heaven wide open, her soul bared and burned. The man beside so transfixed he almost could not match her with his chords. She was down and out on the street. Darkness had come and pain was all around. She was under no illusion. His blood would not cleanse hers. But she would do it. She couldn't not. When she was done, she let the silence hang. The old man came from behind the bar and he handed her an envelope stuffed with bills. She frowned till he pointed to the sign, "Sing to Win, monthly, $100. She did not wait for the cheers. She would hear them carry out into the lonely night as she left with her bag and found her way to the bus station. This was her path to perdition. A girl on her way to right a lifetime of wrongs. Chapter 44. Walk spent a night and day dealing with the fallout. There were questions from Ivor County PD. He said little. They were still trying to figure out why at dark had broken into the Noble House. Walk did not help much with that. He said he was tired, sick, that he'd write a full report in the coming days. He wouldn't speak of Duchess in the tape. He'd find a better angle. He climbed into the rental and drove someplace he could sleep, a motel 50 miles from anywhere. In a tired room, he lay on his bed and thought of Duchess, lost out there now. He did not fight the way his body shook, just caved to it. His pants were loose. He'd punched new holes in his belt 3 times now. If he looked in the mirror, he would see a frown where his smile had once been. They said he'd never change. He'd clung to that. In the drawer beside, he found a Bible and a pen and paper, and he wrote, resigned to resignation. He gave up his badge. There were still questions, maybe forever unanswered, but he would try for the girl and the boy. He would still try. He called Martha, got her machine, so left the kind of rambling message that told her he was good. Knew she wouldn't buy it, but signed off with a promise to call again after he got some sleep. He also told her he was sorry. sorry for more than he could possibly atone for. His cell rang at 9. He expected to hear Martha's voice, but it was Tena Legros from the lab. He hadn't leaned heavy this time, just asked if it could be done quietly.
I owe you some blood work. I did leave messages, several over the past month.
Sorry, I've been.
Anyway, I made the gun a priority.
The blood in Dark's place, Milton.
No, actually. Animal, not human.
Walk ran a hand through his hair as he thought of Milton, hunting with Dark, then heading back to his place after. Deer?
Could be.
Right.
You okay, Walk?
The gun, did you get anything?
We pulled prints.
Vincent King? He held his breath, the room doing its spin. All or nothing now.
No, actually.
Walk took it, too tired even for his pulse to quicken.
It's small.
Woman?
Child. Small child.
Walk closed his eyes and then he dropped the phone as the pieces began to fit. He ached, so beat he could barely hold his head up. He thanked Tena, then dialed Vincent. Vincent answered on the second ring, a man that did not sleep anymore, one of the night people.
I know.
He listened to Vincent draw breath.
What do you know?
Vincent said it quiet, not a challenge, just acceptance now.
Robin.
The little boy's name hung long in the air. The last year, all that had gone before. Walk stepped to the window, saw the freeway empty of cars, the sky empty of stars.
I found the gun.
The silence was long, just the two of them holding together like always.
You want to tell me?
I took two lives, Walk. I can live with one of those.
Baxter Logan, he paid his price, right?
You think it makes that woman's family happy what I did to the monster that ruined her?
Maybe.
I know what I did. I live with that. But not Sissy. Each time, each one of my breaths is stolen from her.
Tell me what happened.
You already know.
Walk swallowed.
The boy shot his mother.
Vincent breathed.
But he was aiming at someone else, Walk said, quiet. Sad.
Dark.
The girl burned his club. Insurance wouldn't pay.
How'd you fit?
I saw his car, went round back, the cut.
Dark said he was searching the place, tried the kid's bedroom door, and Star lost it. The boy climbed out the window, heard his mother scream, and came back.
Brave, Walk said. Like his sister.
Star shoved him in the closet, got him out of the way. The kid found the gun. Maybe he thought she was getting beat. He aimed out, closed his eyes, and pulled the trigger. Still had him closed when I got there.
Dark.
Would have killed him. He had her blood on him. Kid's the only witness, whatever he says. Dark's at the scene. Dark goes down.
Walk rested his head against the glass as light rain began to fall. He thought of Dark, that perception, and how he used it. Maybe he would have killed the boy. Walk didn't think so, but the angle presented itself.
How'd you plead it?
Told him I'd take it all. I'd take the fall. No one else for the cops to look for. He was never there.
He bought that?
No, the house, Walk. He wanted the house, so I gave in. He could buy it if he left the kid alone.
Why didn't you just plead guilty?
Plead guilty and I spend the rest of my life in that cage. Plead innocent and the end comes at me. The case wasn't winnable. Questions would have come. The gun.
You hid it.
Dark took it. His insurance, in case I changed my mind.
You helped Robin back through the window, washed your hands.
Shit, Vincent. 30 years inside, you learn about crime scenes.
You plugged the holes and stayed silent.
Your questions didn't need answering. I look more guilty if I just stay silent. Start talking and you tie me up. No gun. I couldn't explain that. Let them stick a needle in my arm. Let them do what they should have done 30 years ago.
Sissy, it wasn't murder.
It was, Walk. You just didn't want to see it that way. I'm ready now. I want to go. I've always wanted to go. But after I'd served my time, Hal said he was glad I was in there, that I should be punished. Death was too good.
Star couldn't raise the funds to buy your place, not the down payment, the taxes, not after what Duchess did, Walk said.
I didn't know that.
But then he wrote me. I saw the letter.
Right.
You must have been mad.
I was. At first I was. Not for me, but the money. I needed that money.
He gave the gun back because he couldn't keep his side of the deal. A man of his word, right?
Silence for a long time.
People are complex, Walk. Just when you think you got them figured. He gave me an out if I ever needed it.
Sometimes wishes do come true.
The wishing tree. Walk said it to himself, tired smile on his face. Right there, and he'd missed it.
Walk thought of Vincent on the other end. He wondered how ground down he was, if there was any of the kid left in there.
You banked on the boy not remembering.
I saw him, gone like that, out of this world. I don't think he knows. So I told him I did it. That's enough, just that doubt. Let someone else take it away. Fuck, he deserved that. I tried to bring her back. I pumped her chest with everything I got.
Walk thought of Star, the broken ribs, and he thought of Dark and Madeline and the cruel hand of fate.
You lied for me. You stood in court wearing your badge and you lied. You still know yourself, Walk?
No.
You can't save someone that doesn't want to be saved.
Quiet a long time.
How's things with Martha?
Walk just about managed to smile.
That's why you wanted her.
A million tragedies began that night, Walk. Most of them I can't fix.
Walk thought of Robin Radley.
I used to want to go back and do it all again, but now I'm just tired. So fucking tired.
Maybe you did a good thing.
I owe a debt to the Radleys. He might not remember. He's small. I could die giving him his life back. There's a chance it'll all stay black.
You near gave your life for a chance.
I couldn't let him be me.
Chapter 45. Walk drove down last roads, each mile behind one he would not travel again. He had spent a life afraid of change. He had killed. Nothing outward was different. He knew it would not be. The bay came at him in such glory he kept his eyes on broken lines. 20 miles from home he found the place, a storage facility. West Gale, tired, red lockups, no office, just a number to call if he needed service. Walk pulled up, headed over, and took the keys from his pocket. He checked the number on the tag and found one of the smaller units. He unlocked it and stepped into Dark, found the switch, light flickered, strips cast dull yellow. On one side, he found a couple of plastic storage containers. He worked slow, saw everything from an old, happier life. Wedding album. Dark looked young, tall, but not so imposing. His wife was beautiful, and there were photos of Madeline, brown hair and light eyes, wide smile on every shot. She looked like her mother. A christening gown, an old wedding dress, the kind of things passed down generations. Walk would keep hold of it. Pay the rental, let the people at the hospital know where it was in case miracles did happen. He was about to turn to kill the lights and lock up when he saw a pile of boxes and garbage bags in the far corner. He checked them, old files, nothing of note, and then he saw a stack of junk mail, and he saw the name and address, D. Lane. He trained his mind back a year before it came to him. Dark's offer to store her things while she found someplace else to live. Before they made that deal, she'd carry with her. He tossed the mail back onto the pile, then cursed when the whole thing toppled. As he bent down, it came to view, out of place. A single videotape. He drove back toward the Cape, reached the town limit, saw a new sign, hard metal and towering scaffold. Light fell on the promise of new homes, new stores. The motion had passed silently. Walk distracted, just another change in a changing world. The station was dark. He left the lights off, sat in his office, and loaded the tape, then frowned when he saw the 8, Dark's Club. And then he noted the date in the top corner, and his pulse began to quicken as he realized what he was watching. It covered a day. He rolled it forward till he saw her, Star, working the bar. He watched her like the ghost she was, the way she smiled and flirted as the tips rained down. He skipped a little, stopped at a scuffle, bodies everywhere. Star fell back, clutched her eye, and appeared to curse. She was stumbling, moving like the liquor had finally taken effect. Walt couldn't see who the guy was, back to the camera. But then the man walked out. He recognized the limp, the pain it took to try and correct it. Brandon Rock. He searched again, rolled it forward till he saw her, clear as day. Small blonde hair, face tortured with hate as she worked. He watched Duchess start the fire that would burn for a year. When he was done, he stood. He took off his badge and placed it on the desk, then took the tape from the machine and stepped out into the night air. He walked a little up Main, snapped the tape from the case, and pulled out the reel, then he dropped it into the trash. The King House was empty. Duchess stood out front, an old Taurus, parked up at the curb. She'd taken the keys from a lady playing the slots in a bar in Camarillo. She'd leave it there, keys inside, too tired to feel sorry now. She'd circled it and knocked on the door. There was doubt that lingered, that she could go through with it despite the journey she had been on to get close to this moment. As she'd driven down Main, she had stared at streets like she expected something to have changed in the year she'd have been away. Nothing major, just something that told her Cape Haven was not the same without her and her small family. Instead, she saw the town at rest, nothing different, not even a yard left overgrown, just gloss, like her mother's blood had been painted over so thoroughly, like she had never been. She went round to the back again, found a rock and broke a window. Crashing waves stole the sound. Inside the King House, she walked through the rooms, gun in hand. Photos on the wall, Vincent and Walk, their backs to the water. The kind of carefree smiles she herself had never known. She climbed the stairs and checked each bedroom. Only moonlight to guide her. She saw a closet, Vincent's clothes, so few. Three shirts, a pair of jeans, heavy boots. She thought of the making of a murderer if it began long before birth, cursing the parents' genes, the fatal bloodline. Or maybe it slowly crept, too many knocks, too many scars. Vincent King might have once been good, but a child's blood did not wash from your hands. In 30 years amongst the most flawed of men, it would take the strongest to survive intact. There was no bed, just a mattress on the floor, no furniture in the room, no paintings, or television, or books. Just a single photo taped to the wall. A photo that took her breath, for the girl looked just like her. Blonde hair and blue eyes. Sissy Radley. She left the house and walked the mile. Climbed the trails that rose high above the town lights. She stopped halfway, every muscle ached. Air pained her chest, like her body did not want her to go on amongst the living. As she crested the final hill, she saw the light, the late service. She had been once before, sat with the half dozen for no other reason than she could not sleep. Little Brook Episcopal. She walked up the road alongside the picket fence. Came to the door and listened to the heavenly music. She dropped her bag for a moment, leaned against the wood, the long day almost over. With nowhere left to go, she made her way to the small grave where her mother lay, beside Sissy, in the part of the cemetery reserved for the most innocent. Duchess had asked they be together again. She stopped dead. He stood there, tall against the precious night. Behind him, the land fell away, the sheer cliffs, and endless sea. At Ivy Ranch Road, Walk headed up the path and knocked. Brandon looked like shit, said nothing, just stepped aside as Walk went into the house. It smelled bad, takeout cartons everywhere, beer cans, thick dust on every surface, a stack of fitness DVDs, rock hard, Brandon sucking in his stomach on the cover. Brandon's eyes looked glazed as he sat down at the kitchen counter. Walk thought of Star, how she'd knocked him back one too many times, and maybe that was why Brandon had let his fist go that night.
"I know what you did," Walk began. "And that was all it took."
Brandon cried. The dam burst. He cried till his shoulders shook. Walk watched him, the confusion building.
"I didn't mean it. I'm sorry. You have to believe it, Walk."
Walk said nothing, just listened as the story broke between sobs.
"I reached out, like you said. I offered to take him out on the boat, fishing or something, whatever. I wanted an end to it. But then I thought about it, how he scratched the Mustang. I knew it was him. Who else would do that? At first I was going to report it, but then everything with Star happened. It was supposed to be a joke to get him back. We weren't even far from shore."
Walk breathed, the confusion passing, just sadness left.
"You pushed him in, Milton."
Brandon cried more, coughed like he was retching up the memory.
"I waited for him back at the dock. I just wanted to show him, make him swim back, just a joke. And then he didn't show, so I went back. But he was gone, Walk. He was gone."
Walk sat with him, called Boyd and waited, told Brandon what to say. "Be honest. You'll sleep better at night." He watched them take him, Brandon doing the walk with his head bowed low, only breaking once more when he glanced up and saw Milton's old house across the street. It might have been karma, the cosmic forces Star used to talk about. Walk didn't have long to think it over because D'Lane called his cell and she told him she'd seen someone break into the King house.
"Did you get a look at them?"
Walk said, breaking into a run.
"It looked like a girl."
He ran all the way to Sunset. With the weight gone, he moved light and fast. He was sweating when he made it to the door and hammered it hard. Round back, he saw broken glass. He traced her steps, her counterstroke. He knew he was too late for what would come. On the mantel, he found the photo. Barely recognized the boy he was, but in Vincent and Star, he saw only smiles. A snapshot of time he could no longer call back, no matter how hard he tried. And then up the stairs, and he too stopped still when he saw it. Maybe Vincent could move on from the cell, the warden, the men and the chain-link fences. But he'd never leave the little girl behind. She watched him a long time before she took those steps.
"I was waiting for you," Vincent said.
Duchess stepped nearer, slowly set down her bag and pulled out the gun. It was heavier than she remembered. Right then, she could barely hold it up. He looked at her like she was the last child, the last good thing in his world. She saw he had laid flowers on the graves, like he had a right. He saw the gun, but did not seem alarmed. Instead, his shoulders dropped, and he breathed out, steady, like he had been waiting on the final end to a lifetime of endings. He stepped back as she stepped forward again and again until she planted her feet and watched the moonlight behind him. Music from the old church carried.
"I like this song," he said. "There was a chapel at Fairmont. I always liked this song. Earth's joy grows dim, its glories pass away. Change and decay in all around I see."
"I'm sorry.
I don't want you to talk."
"Okay."
"I don't want you to tell me what happened. I don't want to know."
"Okay."
"People say it's not fair."
"It never is."
"That day when you gave me a gun, you said it was your father's gun."
"Yes."
"I cleaned it like you showed me. Respect it, right? But then I hid it in the closet, even though you told me to use it to protect myself."
"I shouldn't have told you."
"So that's what I'm doing. Hal said you're a cancer. Everything you get near, you just kill it all dead. He said you don't deserve to live."
"He was right."
Walk stood up in court and told a lie. Star said he was all good.
"I'm sorry, Duchess."
"Fuck!"
She reached up and fixed her hat. Her breath left her. Her voice barely held, but she steadied her hand and reached for the trigger.
"I am the outlaw, Duchess de Radley, and you are the murderer, Vincent King."
"You don't have to do this," he smiled gently.
"I know what I have to do. Justice, vengeance. I can handle it."
"You can still be anyone you want, Duchess."
She leveled the gun.
His tears fell, but still he smiled at her. I came here to say goodbye. This isn't on you. I won't let you carry me with you.
She gasped when he stepped back, his arms out as he took flight.
She ran and screamed and stopped at the cliff edge as the darkness took him.
The gun fell by her side. She dropped with it, her knees in the dirt as she reached a hand out over the cliff and grasped at the air.
Behind her mother lay, and Duchess used the last of her strength to crawl over to the grave.
She pressed a cheek to the stone and closed her eyes. Part 4. Heartbreaker. Chapter 46. Blair Peak bordered the Elkton Trinity National Forest and the Whitefoot, the kind of town where Walk could have spent the day just staring out at the sprawl of wilderness, at trees so tall it was as if they were reaching up for God's hand. He'd made the drive, past the barren hills and dead grass of a dozen haunted communities, more than 100 times over the past 20 years, Star beside, counting off the miles in quiet thought. And then, after, as happy as he ever saw her, what demons lived in her soul were exorcised by a man named Colton Sheen, a counselor who worked out of a room above a store that sold second-hand pianos. In his hand was a small urn. The service had been brief. The last will of Vincent King had been clear and vague enough. The forest spanned 6 counties and 2 million acres. Walk figured here was as good a place as any. He crossed the street and dropped down, trod the dead leaves to towering sugar pines, and then scattered the ashes over the forest floor. He said nothing, no grand goodbyes, just allowed himself a moment to remember a time finally beginning its fade. After, he walked up Union Street and found the door. The shop closed up, but a light burned against the winter's day. He buzzed up, heard the door give, and headed into the small lobby and up narrow stairs. He'd been in once before, the first time, just to make sure she didn't bolt.
I'm Chief, Walk stammered. Sorry, I'm Walker, just Walker. I used to be Chief of Cape Haven PD.
Walk was not surprised when Sheen drew a blank. The man that stood before him had aged nicely, full head of gray hair, an inch off 6 feet. He extended a hand when Walk mentioned Star Radlett.
I'm sorry it's been such a long time, Sheen said. I have someone due in 10 minutes, so I can give you those, but that's all, I'm afraid.
They sat, Walk falling into the soft chair, smiling at the serene prints on the wall. Beside was a large window opening up to a view of the Elkton Trinity and the white-capped Alps.
I could lose a day staring out.
Sheen smiled.
I often do.
I'm here about Star. You should know I can't tell you anything. I'm bound—
Yes, Walk cut in.
I'm sorry, I found myself in town again. Just thought I'd stop by. You see, she died. Sheen smiled. Compassion emanated. I saw it. I followed the story in the news. It's tragic, really. But still, even in death.
I'm not even sure why I'm here. Not really.
You're missing your friend.
Yes, I'm missing my friend.
It hit him then, out of all the feelings, all the chasing leads and battling theories. He hadn't thought about just how much he missed his friend. It was easy to see her troubles, her beauty, everything but the real sweet person he had known a lifetime. I guess I just wanted to know why she stopped coming. She did well. For so long, she did so well. And then it all stopped so suddenly, and she never really came back from it. There's a million reasons why people turn back or choose a different path. Even if I could tell you, it's been so long, and I only saw her the one time.
Walk frowned. I'm sorry, it is Star Radlett we're talking about.
Yes, I remember you now. It's not often a patient gets brought in by a police officer.
But I drove her every week.
Not to me. I did see her, though, often. The view. I'm always at the window.
Walk leaned forward.
Where exactly did you see her?
Sheen stood.
Walk followed him to the glass.
Right there, Sheen pointed.
Outside, the clouds swept in as Walk stood on the sidewalk. There was only one bus that ran through Blair Peak, and Walt got on, same as Star had, once a month for a dozen years, the bus stop facing Colton Sheen's picture window. He sat at the back, the bus half empty as it climbed the steep hillside and dipped into the valley. Trees rose and shadowed the road. A while till they cleared the woodland, California opening up, the plains, vast. He got up and walked to the front, stood beside the driver and looked out. He didn't see it till they made the last turn, and then suddenly and without warning, he realized where he was and what he stood in front of. The bus stopped, and he got out. He looked around as it passed. There was nothing else for miles in either direction, just long track road, the razor fence, 20 feet high, and the low buildings that made up Fairmont County Correctional Facility. He waited an hour, sat in the room alone, held his hand up and watched the tremor. He'd slipped a little, missed medication. Life, in the way. Not his, but Vincent's. It was bad now, the pain sometimes, the fear always. He set his alarm an hour earlier, allowing time for a battle that was getting harder to win. The future was a frightening thing, but then he reasoned it always had been. There was a half smile when Cuddy came out. Almost didn't recognize you without the stars. I'm finishing up if you want to walk with me. Walk fell into step with the big warden, stayed close behind him at the gates as they opened and locked. A life of it, order and not, keeping the bad inside and good out. He could not imagine such a toll. I'm sorry I didn't make the service, Cuddy said. Not all that into goodbyes. They walked along the fence, towers like silos. There's things I don't know, Walk said. Cuddy breathed deep, like he'd been waiting. Walk did not know what they were doing, walking the perimeter. Maybe Cuddy just liked the free air after pulling 10 hours. Star came here, Walk said. She did. But her name, I checked the visitor logs. I checked everything I could. They passed a guard and a tower. Cuddy raised a hand.
I like dusk, Cuddy said. The end of astronomical twilight. The sun degrees below horizon.
I let them out sometimes to watch a sunset. 500 men, killers and rapists and pushers. They stand together and stare at the sky. It's the only time we don't have real trouble.
Why?
The beauty, maybe. It makes it harder to deny higher power.
Or easier.
Don't lose your heart, Walk. That would be the real tragedy. Tell me about Star. Cuddy stopped, the furthest point from the prison between two towers and guards ready to end life just as quick as any jury. I liked her. I got to know her plenty over the years. Vincent King was as decent a man as I ever met. And I got to see it. The change. Scared kid, fearless for a while, and then he got to be okay with it.
What?
His own skin. Okay, but not good. And Star, she helped him. He caused her the pain, and he was the only one that could take it away. He had purpose again.
Walk watched the first stars burn, heavenly from out there.
He needed her to feel something again, more than who he was when he wore orange and walked in chains. It played like a marriage over 20-odd years. She'd come. Sometimes they didn't speak at the start, just watched each other. She was all fire, burning up. And he'd look at her like she was placed on this earth just for him.
What about the other prisoners?
Oh, I didn't let those two in the common room. I mean, at first, of course, but I saw right off she was too young for it. The men were too cruel with their words, promises, and threats. Vincent got it bad after. Guards broke it up in time, but once the others knew his weak spot, they'd run with it. There's another room, an apartment we had. Conjugal. It was to be earned. Just us in 3 states now.
You let them alone like that?
Vincent needed it to feel human again. Shit, I needed to see him human again. And Star, the two of them, cosmic forces and all that. Not a prison on Earth could cut that kind of pull.
Walk smiled.
I couldn't put it through the logs, not strictly allowed. I watched her, the shape, 9 months. That glow, you know, twice. Two miracles born from despair.
Cuddy smiled. But she didn't ever bring them.
He wouldn't have it,
not caged like that, and he didn't want them to know. Can't really blame him. He said there's not a kid out there that wants a father from Fairmont. We talked about it. It gave him resolve. Live life for someone else. That's not wasted, right? Walk closed his eyes and thought of Duchess and Robin, their blood, that unknown. He asked me not to tell. I said I wouldn't volunteer it, but also that I wouldn't lie if someone came asking. I'm a man of my word.
Right.
Cuddy laughed softly. Not many of us left. I think maybe Star told Dark. Why? Just something he said at the end. The things people do for their own, right? They saw that in each other. Vincent and Star. They couldn't keep it going. And then it was changed. They pulled the apartment down to make way for the new Cat 5. Vincent wouldn't have her in the common room again, not after the last time. I mean, these are men that'd make promises that they'd go look her up when they got out. Empty, but still. Vincent didn't want that. Not for her. Not for his children.
So we cut her off, Walk said sadly.
Just about the hardest thing I've ever done. Turning her away like that. He told her, move on, find someone else. She still came. A year she waited, in case he changed his mind. And then nothing. I figured she'd found a way to move past.
She did. Not past, just a way to feel nothing.
Cuddy said nothing, but he knew. There wasn't a tragedy of any kind he had not witnessed or seen the fallout from. So you didn't know any of it? Cuddy said.
No.
Star knew what I would have said, that she needed to look out for herself, that it wasn't helping, dwelling on the past. Like I know, like I'm one to talk, maybe they needed something just for them. Their small family, broken, but theirs. When they reached the gate, Walk shook his hand.
Thank you, Cuddy. You did a good thing.
Can I ask, why now? What brought you back? Chance. Vincent wanted me to scatter his ashes in the Elkton Trinity. I'm not even sure why.
Cuddy smiled, then took hold of Walk's shoulder and pointed.
That's Vincent's cell up there, 11-3, 30 years looking out. You see what it faces?
Walk turned.
And there, above the ranging hills, he saw the 2 million acres of freedom. Chapter 47. It was a fine fall morning. Bright sunlight crossed the mountain behind. Duchess rode the gray, the two heading out together each day before Montana woke. She knew the trails well enough now, breath billowed. The gray, content to go slow, she would not run well again. Duchess stroked her as they stood atop the butte and looked out over the ranch. The house was sawn timber and beautiful. Fire burned, the chimney smoked. There were barns. A river she had followed 3 miles through aspens before seeing wolf tracks and quickly retreating. She had a knife, her grandfather's, and on weekends she would explore alone, cut paths into the shrubland, stepping through shallow water tables crafted by the fall. The months that had followed were long and difficult, but she found the new surroundings helped. She took it back to breathing, like Hal had once told her, and though it did hurt, all of it, she knew time was all powerful. When she reached the stable, she led the gray in, made sure she had water and straw, and patted her nose. She found Dolly in the kitchen reading a newspaper, the smell of coffee rich in the air. Duchess had gone to her, turned up at midnight, and made good on her promise. At first, she had agreed to stay one night. The next morning, Dolly had led her to the stable and showed her the gray, which she'd taken for free after they settled Hal's estate. One day had led to a week, which turned to a month, and more. Dolly acted on the pretense of needing help with the land, though she was wealthy enough to have several men stop by each week. Duchess worked hard, stayed out from dawn till the sun fell away. They did not speak much at first. The girl, so beaten, Dolly knew it was only in time she could help her. Dolly broached the subject of formal adoption one morning, as they swept chokecherry leaves from the driveway. Duchess said nothing for 3 days, then told Dolly if she was stupid enough to want her as a daughter, then she should see a doctor. But if he gave her a clean bill, then yes, she would like to stay. Duchess kicked her boots off. I need to earn some money.
Dolly looked up from a newspaper. I owe someone. I need to pay it back.
I can give you.
I have to earn it myself. Outlaws settle their debts. She hadn't yet figured out how to track down Hank and Busy. She'd start at the motel, make calls. She would make things right. Duchess went to pass her, stopped when Dolly held up a letter.
This came for you.
Duchess took it from her. She saw the Cape Haven stamp and retreated to her bedroom, which she had painted a shade of green that matched the hills. She closed the door behind her and settled into the big chair by the window. She knew the writing, small enough that she imagined Walk spent a week composing it. She read it slowly. He apologized for lying in court, for shaking her faith in him. He told her sometimes people did the wrong thing for the right reason. For 20 pages, he spoke of his life and her mother's, a young Vincent King and Martha May. He told her how he was sick and how he used to be ashamed of it and scared of losing his place. And of place, he rambled for a page before he got to it and told her the kind of truth that saw her drop the papers, stand, and pace her room. When she calmed, she gathered them up and read on. He told her of Vincent, of the blood in her veins, and how she should not feel sad but proud, of how her mother had always loved him and had kept that love alive through the harshest of conditions. He mentioned Vincent's torture of how he could not atone for the life he had stolen. She was loved, though, that's what he said. She and her brother were born of the most unbreakable love. Enclosed was a single photo, Walk on a rusting boat, the sign new, Cape Haven Fishing. In the water, Duchess saw the reflection, a small lady with dark hair holding the camera, the widest smile on her face. And along with the photograph was a legal document that was Vincent King's last will and testament. Later, Dolly would tell her how she, along with Robin, now owned a grand house in Cape Haven. Vincent had been restoring it for them, and that they did not need do anything yet, but one day she could visit or sell it or do whatever she pleased. In the space of a little time, she had gone from having nothing to something. The future's still uncertain, but it was there. That night she lay awake and thought of all that had gone before, what she had learned and what she would forget. She had been waiting, healing, getting strong enough again. The next morning she told Dolly she was ready. Chapter 48. The town announced itself without fuss, just a small sign that told its name. Owl Creek. Dolly had a friend in Rexburg. They'd made the drive overnight. From there, Duchess had ridden the bus herself. Dolly had asked once if she needed her. Duchess told her no, but thank you. The bus was long, silver with a red and blue detail. When it pulled over, she grabbed her bag and stood, walked her way down the aisle, and stepped out into Wyoming air. The driver called and wished her safe travel, closed the door, and moved on. She cast a last look at the windows, reflected stares, a couple of smiles, the smell of the engine, mechanical heat. She walked with her head down now since that day, quieter than she had been before. She passed the Capitol Hotel. Awnings hung over the kind of stores that saw well-heeled visitors shopping their windows. Lacey's Pottery, Alden Antiques, the Presley Flower Shop. Past the Carnegie Library, the sun low and heavy over the Bighorns, the vista of rolling plains before it. She breathed deep. Her back ached from the seat. She freshened up in the restroom of a shiny gas station, wanted her hair to be just right beneath her hat. She carried a small map. Where she needed to be was circled and didn't look all that far. She walked less than a mile and found a wide patch of grass bordered by pretty houses. Another road and she found it. Owl Creek Elementary. The building was low, signs painted white, flowers broke from hanging baskets. Across was another patch of grass, and beyond that a large oak that reminded her of the wishing tree. She made her way over, stood beneath the arms, then sat on a shaded patch of leaves so orange she scooped one up and held it toward the sky. In her bag was a bottle of water, and she drank a little, saving some for later. She had a candy bar but was too nervous to eat. The first car pulled up, then another, but most, she noticed, walked their way through the town to collect their children. She saw Peter right off, Jet tugging on his leash, Peter smiling hello to just about everyone. She clutched her chest when the first children came out. She fussed with her hat, then retied her sneaker. She wore a best dress, yellow, his favorite color. She gasped when she saw him. He looked taller, his hair cut shorter, his smile unalloyed and beautiful. She knew he would one day be a heartbreaker. Beside him was Lucy, and he gripped her hand tight as she led him to the end of the path. And then he saw Peter, and Robin ran toward him, and Peter scooped him up, and they hugged tight for a long time, her brother's eyes closed. Peter set Robin down and handed him the leash, Jet jumping up and licking his face, Robin laughing. Duchess stood rooted as Peter led them to the small park beside, pushed Robin on the swing, helped him up the steps, then collected him at the bottom of the tall slide. She watched them, felt each of his smiles as if they were her own, heard his laughter carry far. Lucy joined them. She carried a bag, paper spilling from it. When Robin saw her, he ran toward her like it had been the longest time. Duchess moved when they did, stayed a good distance behind, but they would not have noticed her. She tried to call out several times, so quiet she could barely get out his name. They lived in a nice home, green clapboard, white shutters, neat yard, the kind of house she had once dreamed of finding for them. They had a mailbox, the Laytons. She walked up their street as the sun dropped, Wyoming sky coming at her with such delicate beauty. She checked out the neighbors, saw kids, bikes, a bat, and ball. When dusk fell, she made her way back and slipped down the side of their place into the yard, a swing set, a barbecue, a bug motel. For a long time, she stood frozen, night replaced day with so many stars. She made her way to the porch, took the steps, and stopped by the window. The light burned from inside. The perfect scene played. Lucy with Robin, helping him with his reading. Peter at the counter, calling out dinner, a plate for each of them. They sat together, the television on but muted. Jet beside Robin, his eyes expectant. Robin finished every bite. She watched them till it was time, till Peter kissed Robin's head gently and Lucy took the reading book and his hand and led him up the stairs. She wondered if he would remember all they had been through. She knew there was a good chance he would not the detail. He was young enough to be anyone. The world was his. He was a prince, and finally she understood why. She was not a girl that cried, but right then tears fell as she allowed the dam to break. She cried for everything she had lost and everything he had found. Duchess pressed her palm to the glass and said goodbye to her brother. Chapter 49. Duchess took to her bedroom for the next few days. Dolly knew to give her time, space, room to breathe, despite the worry. She left her meals outside the door, checked in only once to ask if she'd like help tending the gray that morning. Inside, she found Duchess at her small desk, sunlight on her as she wrote. Monday, and Duchess walked into class with Thomas Noble. "Did you finish?" he said. "Yeah." It had been a free assignment, a report of their choosing. She watched kids stand at the front and speak of things so varied as Jefferson and football, summer vacation, and how to track a whitetail. When the teacher called her, Duchess walked to the front of the class, fixed her paper to the board, and swallowed down her nerves. She shoved her hands deep in her pockets and stood before her family tree. Complete. She felt all the eyes on her as she glanced at Thomas Noble, who smiled and motioned for her to start. Duchess cleared her throat, turned to the front, and began. She led with her father, the outlaw, Vincent King. We hope you have enjoyed We Begin at the End, written by Chris Whitaker and read by George Newbern. We Begin at the End is published by Zafra Books, an imprint of Bonnier Books UK. Text copyright 2020 by Chris Whitaker. Production copyright 2020 by Bonnier Books UK. Audible hopes you've enjoyed this program.